We've been talking about what a special thing it is to be a child of God. And we've talked about how we get to be sanctified. We get to be set apart. We've talked about what it's like to be a possession of God. We've talked about what it's like to belong to God and how special all of those things are. Tonight, I want to kind of conclude that by thinking about what a great blessing we have as children of God, that God knows us. You think about that, that's pretty amazing. God, who is the creator of all things, He is the sustainer of the entirety of the universe, He is the one in whom all things exist. He knows me. And that's pretty special. I felt that way before. I remember feeling that way when I found out that Kim knew who I was. And that made me really feel good. And I remember being in classes when I was in college. Sometimes the classes were huge. 600 people in the same class. We met in this giant auditorium. You couldn't even see the front. You watched it on monitors. And I was amazed because I was walking out and the fellow that was teaching the class, he knew me. I one time flew up to Fairbanks, Alaska. It seems that the Pope was going to greet President Reagan up in Fairbanks. And I got off the airplane and I immediately was struck by the amount of Secret Servicemen that were accompanying the president, you know, and you could spot them a mile away. They were, number one, they were the only people in Fairbanks, Alaska that were wearing suits. They were the only people in Fairbanks, Alaska who didn't have on coats, even though it was like 40 degrees below zero. And on top of that, they all had a big lump under their arm. And then I was at the airport when the Pope arrived. And I was really impressed because one of the Secret Service people, and they don't call them Secret Service people when they accompany the Pope, but one of the Pope's security entourage walked up to me and he said, "Hello, Mr. Cruz, how are you?" I've never met that man before in my life. I had no idea that he even knew that I was going to be there, but I'll tell you what, when he said, "How are you, Mr. Cruz?" I felt important. Probably wasn't, but I felt like I was important. Now, the difference with God is God knows us and He thinks that we're important. We've already read Hebrews, the 6th chapter, beginning at about verse 9, and apparently it works a lot better if I'll stay up here behind the podium so I can get the technology to work for me better. Hebrews, the 6th chapter. Got to remember to turn that thing on. Hebrews, the 6th chapter, at verse 9. Okay. There we go. Begins by telling us some of the things that we know about God and some of the things that we know about the way that God thinks about us. But I want to turn now to 1 Peter, and we'll be reading in 1 Peter chapter 5 at verse 8 beginning. Peter says, "Be of sober spirit. Be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, walks about or prowls around like a roaring lion. He seeks someone to devour. Resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world. After you've suffered for a little while, the God of all grace, who called you to His eternal glory in Christ, will Himself perfect, confirm, strengthen, and establish you." So let's think about what that verse tells us. In the first place, it tells us that we need to be aware
of our adversary. Satan is very real. Satan is doing everything he can to destroy. That's all that Satan does. He never tries to build up. In fact, he's called the roaring lion. Now, interestingly, I want to take a little bit of a break here, and I want to think about this idea of a roaring lion. This was a phrase that had been used for many, many, many years. Proverbs, the 28th chapter, and beginning in Proverbs 28 and at verse 15, the writer talks about a roaring lion, and in this place, he says that a roaring lion, or a tyrant who oppresses the poor, is also seeking to destroy. So when those people in the first century heard Peter talk about a roaring lion who walks about seeking whom he may devour, they knew that that had reference to someone who would be like a tyrant who would oppress the poor. And if you lived in the first century and you were thinking about a tyrant who oppressed the poor, you probably thought about the Emperor Caligula. Caligula had been the emperor in Rome from about 37 to about 41. Just to give you a little bit of an idea about Caligula, there are two men, Philip of Alexandria and Seneca, who were contemporaries with Caligula, and they describe him as an insane emperor who was self-absorbed, was angry, who killed on a whim, who indulged in too much spending and too much sex. He's accused of sleeping with other men's wives and bragging about it, killing for mere amusement, deliberately wasting money, causing starvation, and wanting a statue of himself in the temple in Jerusalem so he could be worshipped. Once, just to give you an idea, when they heard a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour, this, they would think, tyrant that's trying to oppress the poor. Let me give you an idea of what kind of person Caligula was. Once, at some games at which he was presiding in the Colosseum in Rome, he was said to have ordered his guards to throw an entire section of the audience into the arena during intermission to be eaten by wild beasts because he'd run out of prisoners. So when we talk about a roaring lion walking about seeking whom he may devour, understand that what they would think was somebody like Caligula. Caligula is said to have minted the coins that you see there. On one side, you see the image of Caligula. On the obverse, you see three women to whom he was related, with whom he had children. So when Seneca says he had way too much sex, Seneca knew what he was talking about. This is a roaring, this is the characteristic of Satan. He is very real, and he seeks only to destroy. He never seeks to build up. Now, on the other hand, we find that we have a God who knows us, who operates always for our benefit. I cannot imagine what a blessing that is. I don't have to live in a world that makes me afraid that at any point the emperor could throw me into the pit. I know that God guards us. This idea of God guarding us, This is a military idea. These are military words. And when we think about the ways that God guards us, we of course think about Jesus being an advocate with the Father. The Father knowing that we need someone who can speak for us. I don't know if you've ever been in court, but I have. I got speeding tickets, and sometimes I got speeding tickets for doing things that were really stupid. And I had to go to court. Well, I thought I was pretty smart. And I figured that I would waltz into court and I would call into question all of the things that the police officer was going to say about me. And I really didn't anticipate that the police officer would show up because he didn't want to go up against me. I walked into the court. The judge said, "Mr. Cruz, do you have anything to say on your behalf?" And I about wet my pants. I thought I was pretty hot stuff. What I wouldn't have given for somebody to speak for me at that moment. One time I had the opportunity to meet a fantastic speaker, wonderful litigator, F. Lee Bailey. Maybe you've heard that name. Well, F. Lee Bailey had done a lot of work with lie detectors. And he came to the University of Redlands when I was a student there, and he was delivering an address. And I thought, you know, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to ask F. Lee Bailey some questions that I really need to know, because I was a debater, and I thought he'll have to answer me and I'll be able to carry on this marvelous conversation with him. I asked him a question, and he went, That wasn't because the question was so smart. It was because he wasn't. Jesus is our advocate. One day we're going to have to stand before God and we're going to have to look him in the eye, figuratively. And I know that Jesus is going to be there for me. God sent Jesus so he could be here, so he could know me and know the difficulties that I'm having, and he would be able to speak to God on my behalf. 1 John the 2nd chapter at verse 1. "My little children, I'm writing these things to you that you may not sin. But if anyone sins, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous." And Jesus understands. Make no mistake. Jesus understands, and he can explain it to God. Hebrews, the 2nd chapter, passage that we're intimately familiar with, especially because so many times we feel like we need someone who can make our case to God, who can explain to God. I was over at Dan Mandy's today, and Seth had a sign that he wanted his mom to hang up. And that sign said, "But Santa, wait, I can explain." Would it be nice to have somebody who could speak to God on our behalf? That's what God gave us when he gave us Jesus. Hebrews 2, "Therefore, since the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise also partook of the same," that's of course talking about Jesus, "that through death he might render powerless him who had the power of death," that is the devil, "and he might free those who through fear of death were subject to slavery all their lives. Assuredly, he does not give help to angels." I might add, he doesn't give help to those people that don't put him on. But he gives help to the descendants of Abraham. That, of course, if you read the rest of Hebrews, you're going to understand that that's children who walk by faith. "Therefore, he had to be made like his brethren in all things, that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God." Isn't that marvelous? And God guards us because he provides us with a way to avoid temptation. Matthew, the 6th chapter, when Jesus is teaching the disciples to pray, he says, "One of the things that you acknowledge in your prayer is or one of the things that you ask for in your prayer is that God not lead you into temptation. He will protect. And when we do have to face temptation, 1 Corinthians the 6th chapter, excuse me, the 10th chapter, verse 13, Paul says that he will make a way of escape so that we may be able to bear it. God is on our side. And that's a fantastic promise, especially considering the fact that our adversary, like Caligula, seeks only to destroy us. The second thing that we know is in Hebrews the 6th chapter. It's a passage that we read earlier. Hebrews 6 says, Beloved, at verse 9, we're convinced of better things concerning you, things that accompany salvation, even though we're speaking in this way. So Paul says, or the writer of the book of Hebrews says, we are convinced of better things than this about you, even though we're going to speak this way. When we are the children of God, it's apparent to observant people that we live in a certain way, that we're different than the people that are around us. People can see it. And Paul says, I'm convinced, because I know you, that I know what kind of people you are. But in spite of the fact that he knows what kind of people they are, he says, you know, there's some things that still need to be said. That's always impressed me as one of the difficult things about preaching. You spend a lot of time talking about the things that need to be said, and we don't spend a whole lot of time acknowledging the wonderful things that we do. We don't spend enough time on the first part of this, the things that I know about people who are godly. And we spend an awful lot of time on the end of it. And so sometimes we feel like I'm not going to go to church anymore because I already feel bad enough. If I ever get to the point that you begin to think that, you would only be my friend if you said, you know, let's spend a little bit of time talking about the good things that people are doing. Now, the second thing that we know from Hebrews 6 and verse 9 is that we have better things that characterize us than the things that characterize the people that are falling away. We can fall away. We talk about God knowing us and God being our guardian. He's there wielding His sword to protect us. But if we want to, He'll let us walk out of the port. I can't imagine that we would want to walk out of the port. But we can. Hebrews the 3rd chapter at verse 12, the apostle says, Take care, brethren, that there be not in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God. It's possible that people will walk away from the fort. Although I can't understand why anybody would want to. And then the final thing that we know from this passage is that when Paul talks about this, he's talking about things that accompany salvation. He's not talking about things that earn salvation. We can't earn salvation. Let's just say that right up front. We cannot earn our salvation. I acknowledge that. Pretty much everybody in the world acknowledges that. And nothing that we do as Christians earns our salvation. What we do as Christians is just expressing our appreciation for what God has done for us. He's done so many wonderful things that we simply say thank you. We're people who acknowledge what God has done and thank Him in the way that we live our lives. Look at verse 10. God is not so unjust as to forget your work and labor of love, which you've shown toward His name in having ministered and in still ministering to the saints. God knows our work. He remembers it. He values it. God knows what we do. And it's an unbiased evaluation. You know, it's true that sometimes we overvalue what we do. But I tend to think it's more likely the case with Christians that we undervalue what we do. We don't think that what we've done is praiseworthy at all. I think back to some people that were on the Day of Judgment addressed by God, addressed by Jesus, Matthew the 25th chapter. When you read Matthew 25, beginning at verse 34, you see those people say, when did we ever see you naked and clothe you? When did we ever see you hungry and feed you? When did we ever see you in prison and minister to you? They didn't think that what they had done was anything to be proud of. They didn't think that anything that they had done was even that which accompanies salvation. Jesus said, as much as you did it unto the one unto the least of these my brethren, you did it unto me. So don't undervalue what you have done. And don't be unfairly maligned in your walk in God by people who just want to destroy. The Apostle Paul had to deal with that, didn't he? We've been talking, and Lydia's been talking about that over and over again on Sunday morning in our Bible class in 2 Corinthians. All of the things that were said about the Apostle Paul, you come sometimes get the impression that he couldn't win for losing. No matter what he did, somebody was going to take issue with what he had done. And that's largely true. That is almost always the case. Somebody is going to take issue with what you have done. Don't be destroyed when you are unfairly maligned. God remembers our love. It's a love that we demonstrate in that we minister to the saints. If we're not ministering to the saints, if we're not involved in doing the things that accompany salvation, in essence, what that means is that we don't love God enough. It's not that we don't love the brethren enough. The real problem is that we don't love God enough. But we minister. And you know, sometimes we think we minister because we love the brethren. We love God. 2 Corinthians, the 8th chapter, at verse 1. Another passage that Lenny has been talking about on Sunday mornings. But I want you to notice very quickly what he says. Brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God which was given to the churches of Macedonia, that in great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. Now, how is that possible? He says, I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. And this, not as we expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord. So when we talk about the things that accompany salvation, it's because we have given ourselves to God. Finally, 1 John the 4th chapter. And beginning at verse 4, he says, "You're from God, little children. You've overcome them, because greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world." When we overcome, when we stand against Satan, when we aren't destroyed, it's not by our power. It's because of what God does. So quite simply, that's the thing that enables us to overcome. The reason is because God stands guard. And God strengthens the inner man. He does things that we cannot do for ourselves. Does that mean that when God stands guard, we will never suffer? No. It doesn't mean that at all. God was standing guard when Jesus was nailed to the cross. He did not forsake Jesus. He was still going to protect him from the evil one. The adversary, the devil, could not destroy Jesus. First he put him on the cross, then he realized what a terrible mistake he had made in putting him on the cross, and so he tried to the very best of his ability to get him to come down from the cross. Because Satan knew one thing: if I leave him up there and he dies, he forgives sin. Yes, Jesus suffered terribly at the hands of the adversary. That adversary, Satan, sought nothing good in the cross. There is no way that from the vantage point of Satan, you can say that anything good was happening there. God was in control. He was accomplishing his will. He was standing guard over Jesus. All I can say is that I'm really sure, I'm surely really, really glad that God's on my side. And I can't imagine anyone who could protect me from Satan any better. I know I couldn't. I know that if I was left to my own devices, I'd be destroyed. Now, that's not something that Jesus does for just anybody. Jesus does this for his people. If you're a part of his people, that's what Jesus is doing. If you're not a part of his people, he's not doing that for you. Now, he will never become the evil one. He will never seek to destroy. He always wants you to be a part of his body, but he's not standing guard over you. I can't imagine what a forlorn thought that is. So become a part of his body. We want to help you. We'll stand and we'll sing a song together. It's a good time to think about it. If there's something we can do to help, then let us know. If you're a member of his church and you've forgotten that he was there to protect you and Satan got a hold of you, return. Jesus is there. He will stand guard. And we will, to the best of our ability, rally around you. We will do our part. We'll pray with you. But we want you to think about it while we stand and while we sing this song together.